Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Julianne is a retired astrologer in her 70s who lives in a Paris apartment in the 18th arrondissement of Montmartre. She believes personal presentation, hair, makeup, clothes, and shoes must be impeccable. Her life should be full of delicious food, lovely colors, and fast friends. And her apartment, part of Haussmann's original design, should be a veritable house of happiness. Maison du Bonheur is a wonderful new documentary that follows Julianne over the course of 1 month by a Canadian filmmaker who comes to stay with her. It records the mundane yet fascinating details of the everyday life of a classic Parisienne, even as it subtly reveals her and the filmmaker's unspoken secret histories. The film was directed, shot, and edited on a micro budget by Toronto-based Sophia Bogdanovich, winner of the J. Scott Prize, the Emerging Canadian Directors Award, and many more. This is her second film. It opens today in Toronto, and I'm very pleased to have Sophia here in studio to tell us more about Maison du Bonheur and Julianne. Hi, Sophia. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So the subject of your film is Julianne, but she was a virtual stranger to you, someone mm-hmm. you never met before you flew off to Paris to spend a month with her. How did this strange or unusual arrangement take place?
Yeah, no, it is a little strange and it is a little unusual. So basically, I had like a screening of my short films at the TIFF Bell Lightbox a few years ago, sponsored by the Polish Consulate, and a colleague of mine that I worked with at a Francophone agency came up to me afterwards and was like, I loved your short films. They were about my grandmother and her passing. And she was like, they made me think of my mother. And I was like, oh, that's such a high compliment. And she was like, I know this might sound strange, but if you were ever interested in making a film about my mom, let me know. And I was like, Hélène, I was like, it takes so much work to make a film about someone. Like, can you tell me a little bit about your mom? And she was like, sure. And she was like, you know, my mom's an astrologer. And I was like, that's very interesting. And she said she also lives in Paris. And I was like, okay, that's great. And then she was like, and she's been living in the same home for 50 years in Montmartre. And I was like, wow, that sounds actually quite amazing. And we kind of continued the discussion throughout the year. And that summer, I was turning 30 and I wanted to do something interesting for my 30th birthday and had wanted to return to France at some point. So I approached it again with Hélène and I was like, you know, could you talk to your mom about it? And she did. And Julianne refused. She said no.
Oh.
Yeah, she was like, there's no way I'm going to let this complete stranger come and live in my home. I've never done that before. And she's going to make a movie about me? And she was like, absolutely not. But Hélène persisted. And the way that she got it to work is that she said, Mom, she said, she's exactly like me, but she's better. And then Julianne said, okay, well, Sophia better come here and prove it then.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you got there. What was your first mm-hmm. impression of Julianne?
Well, like going into it, I was like excited, but also like when I was on the airplane, I was like, this feels pretty stupid. Like I haven't talked to her. We haven't exchanged emails. I don't even know what her apartment looks like. Like I had an address. I had my Bolex in my suitcase. I had film, like I was ready to go, but hadn't had like a single point of contact, just like an address and a phone number. And when I got there, I looked at the mat she had on her doorway that said Maison du Bonheur. And
that was the doormat.
It's the doormat. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Her doormat outside her home says Maison du Bonheur, which means House of Happiness, which is not a great title in English, which is why it stayed in French.
Okay. Well, I was coming up with all these like arcane reasons for the title. You know, Agnès Varda made a film. One of her first color films was
Le Bonheur.
Le Bonheur. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, is this a reference to Agnès Varda? No. It's her doormat.
Yeah, okay. It's her doormat. I mean, I'm always happy to reference Agnès Varda, and she has a big influence on my filmmaking. I love her work. But it was the first impression that I had of Julianne. And then when I met her, I just was like, automatically like just in love with her. She was just like so kind, and I kind of just like felt like my guard kind of just like fall down, and I was like, this is gonna work. And, you know, I came in, I put my suitcase away, and I was looking in her living room, which has these beautiful, like, balconies and flowers, and I was looking at them, and the light was really good, and I just said, would you mind if we started filming in the living room? Like, would you be interested? Because she had mentioned she needed to water her flowers. So within, like, the first 20 minutes of meeting each other, we were, like, filming the movie, and that scene is in the film that was only after like 20 minutes that we had met each other.
Did you shoot it with sound separately from picture, or it was synchronized?
That's a really good question, actually. So I shot it on a Bolex camera, and you can't get sync sound with a Bolex. So what I did is, while I was shooting, I taped a microphone down wherever I could because I shot it by myself. And then afterwards, I kind of noted all of like the sound effects like in the scene and like what she was doing. And I was like, okay, that's a watering can. I'm going to record that. I'm going to record the sounds of the street. And I kind of created like a sound bank for myself, and then subsequently Foleyed the entire film afterwards at home in my apartment with my partner, Calvin, which took 3 months.
I can imagine that was like it took longer than it did to film it.
Yeah, it took like a really long time and stuff.
The dialogue wasn't always in sync with the speaker.
No,
it was generally you would see the person talking and you would hear the sort of things they would say, but it wasn't
not sync.
Yeah,
because you can't do it with a Bolex unless you have this thing called crystal sync, which like adds more gear to the camera. And it was just too much of a fuss. So I was like, I'm going to keep it simple, which is why it's not like a talking head documentary either. We would shoot a scene together, like her making the bread. And then I would sit down with her and interview her, and I would say like, what's your recipe and how do you do that? And then I would use those interviews as an overlay to kind of narrate the scenes.
Interesting. Now, a lot of documentary filmmakers say they want to be the fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You're invisible and it's just the subject talking. Mm-hmm. You even say that to her
during
the movie, but it keeps falling through.
Yeah.
And you kept that in as part of the movie. Can you talk about the difficulties in getting her to ignore you and the camera?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it was one of these things that was unavoidable, you know, like the terms of the documentary and what I was making were very clear, but like it's hard to take someone seriously when they're just there with this little spring wound camera, you know, like she knew that it was going to a theater, but the way that we shot it was so intimate and she's such a joyful, curious and interested person that I think that she would just like forget that she shouldn't acknowledge me. And the first edit of the film, I was trying to cut all of these things out, and I just made like a standard portrait. And a very smart friend of mine, Jesse, said, you know, like, this is neat, but like it needs contextualization, you know, like why this portrait about this woman? Why is this camera there? And in kind of like listening to these outtakes, I kind of realized that like, yes, this story is about a biography about a woman, but it's also about our relationship that developed in our friendship. And, you know, the act of like production and filmmaking and what that entails. And that these like moments that felt like mistakes or fobbles actually kind of added to the whole
There were some of the
production.
Funniest parts of the movies too. Yeah. Like the most unexpected parts.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah, yeah. Can you describe, Julianne, in that in the course of the movie, she talks about things that are strictly women's mm-hmm. things.
Mm.
Hair, makeup, mm. nails, mm-hmm. shoes, clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure some men do bake and cook, but it's a very, mm-hmm. very much a women's world. Can you talk mm-hmm. about that?
Yeah, absolutely. What I wanted to do was kind of like capture, I guess, like the pillars of her life. Like, what are the things that are important to her? And, you know, as like a North American going to France, I think like, I guess like the gender pressure is different for women out there. And when I met her, I was kind of worried, like, what will she think of me and like the way that I dress? Because I'm a feminine person, but I'm not that feminine. I don't get my nails done. Like, makeup isn't like a huge priority for me. But what I learned about her is that, like, yes, like, those things are important. She needs to get her nails done. She needs to get a blowout every week. Like, she needs to be well-dressed. Everything is very coordinated. But she's not a judgmental person. Like, her approach to life is like, live and let live. And mm-hmm. her approach is like, this is me. And she very much like loves herself, loves who she is, loves, I guess, like all of the habits and her rituals, the things that she does. But she doesn't have those same kinds of expectations on other people, which I found to be very interesting and just amazing. Like, she's a really free spirit, and the way that she acts in the film is actually exactly the way that she is in real life. Very like non-judgmental and open-hearted.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems the darkest part of the movie was the parts involving you, the filmmaker, and you said something bad happened to, isn't it in Deauville?
Deauville, yeah.
15 years earlier. Yeah. And you go and visit it again, and mm-hmm. it's this very somber, empty, bad feeling there.
It like was the only day that rained.
Yeah, it rained. It was like a beach, but the umbrellas are all closed, completely deserted, gray mm-hmm. skies. You don't mention in the film what happened, but can you say generally what did happen 15 years before?
I can't. It's funny. Like, I've tried. I actually tried. Like, I tried to incorporate that narrative into the film, and I, like, tried from several angles, but it didn't work. And what I kind of, like, realized in trying to incorporate that story, I was just kind of like, you know, the audience doesn't always need to know everything.
That's true.
It's good to have, like, a little bit of mystery and intrigue.
Yeah.
You know, people try to guess, like, what happened there, and they don't know. And I've actually tried to talk about it in Q&As. Like, I didn't think about it. Like, when the film screened at the Vancouver International Film Festival, which was its Canadian premiere, someone asked me that very question, and I tried, and it was super awkward and super hard.
But it does involve, I mean, you do include a picture of is it a high school?
Yeah, I did a French exchange there in like my teenage years. And I just had like a really hard time with, I guess, the people that I was with. And I really wanted to go back to France to kind of like recreate new memories. Like, I had a really hard time while I was there. My experience was beautiful, but also really it developed into something very difficult. And despite that, I was still in love with France, still in love with the French language. I grew up like speaking French and really loved the culture, loved the food, loved everything about it. And I was like, how can I turn this experience that was sour into something, you know, that's beautiful? Which is why I decided
although
to go
you don't
back.
Speak French, you speak Canadian French.
I do. I mean, it's a funny thing. I grew up in Penetanguishene at a Francophone Ontarian school.
You have that Franco-Ontarian accent. Yeah.
I do, yeah. Totally. And then I went to Paris, like, in my teen years in Deauville, and then I kind of got this, like, French accent. So it's, like, Anglophone, Francophone Ontarian, and a little bit of Parisian French, too. So it's a mishmash.
Totally. Finally, mm-hmm. would you say Julienne is the epitome of a Parisienne that no longer exists or that's fading away? Or is it an ongoing thing?
No one's ever asked me that before. Actually, that's a really great question. I mean, I don't know. Like when I spent time with her, what I realized, I was just there with her like last week in Paris. I went to go visit her.
Oh, you went back again.
Great. Yeah. For the first time in 3 years, which was amazing to be there. It was like being on my own film set. It was really funny. And nothing had changed. Like, everything was exactly as it was. And what I realized in like being out and about in the neighborhood is that like I captured the world in a very like insular way. We were always like in her home, in our world, doing our own thing. Like, the film is like about a woman in Paris, but it's not about Paris.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And while I was there in Paris, again, I kind of was just like, wow, we're really like in our like own little world here. And it's funny because Julienne was saying like what she loves about the documentary is she feels as though like in 30 years from now, people will watch the film and she feels like it's an accurate document of like what old school Parisian living is. So I think that, to answer your question, I think that she does feel as though her way of life is a way that's kind of like fading away, and she's very happy to have like the film as a document.
Well, it's a wonderful document. I'm so glad I had a chance to see it.
Thank you.
Sofia Bogdanovich's new feature documentary Maison du Bonheur opens in Toronto today at the TIFF Bell Lightbox. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.